is online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That indeed it is. And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a listener is all too familiar with an entity that returns in the form of different dead loved ones. It's a tricky one. A group can only watch in horror as one of their friends unknowingly approaches a ghost. Birthday fun quickly fades as a listener encounters something terrifying on a birthday trip. And a man begins to see a shadow person near the time that his mother passes away. Those stories and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again.
How are you?
I'm doing better than I was yesterday with the juice stuff.
It
hit me like super late at night. And not like in a bad way, not like, oh, I must sit down in the toilet for a long. It was just giving me a headache. At like 2:30 in the morning, it was like, oh my God. Normally when I'm sleeping, I don't get headaches.
Yeah.
Like there's something going on if I'm getting a headache at that time. And I think, I don't know if it was just like, and I know they say that if you drink a lot of it in like one day or kind of at the beginning of drinking a lot, it hits you kind of like a flu almost.
Yeah.
So kind of hit me. But I've been pretty good today and I had a little kale shake just before, as did you.
I did.
And you discovered that you enjoy kale and cucumbers juiced.
If I don't know what's in it, I'll drink it.
There's also... Well, we'll wait to the end of the episode to tell you what else was hidden in that drink.
There was nothing else hidden in that drink.
And then we'll...
You're a terrible liar. There was
We're going to make you sit here and wonder for the next hour or so what else may have been hidden in... What else may have been juiced. Can you juice it? That's what we found.
Can you juice it?
There's a lot of wildlife around us now.
Oh, gross. We saw a live armadillo crossing the road today.
Really?
Yeah, I was taking Libby to the bus stop, so we were driving.
Those are normally only found dead.
Yeah.
I think I've only seen one live in my life, outside of a zoo.
She had never seen one alive, and so I passed by it, and she didn't see it, so I stopped and backed up so she could gawk at this little armadillo going about its business.
So I stopped and backed over it,
no.
Just to make sure it was like all the other ones that we see on the side of the road.
No, but she thought it was great. So.
Well, that's cool. What was he doing?
He's crossing the road, nosying through some leaves.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't know what they eat or what they look for.
I wonder why it is for most... They're neat little animals. Mm-hmm. I wonder why it is that... It seems like the only time you seem to encounter them is just dead on the side of the road. You know, you see other animals alive, and then you end up saying they're the dead ones, too. But
that's the second one we've seen here, though.
Well, the other one we saw late at night, though.
Yeah.
We were outside on the porch, and we heard this rustling out in the leaves. And it was a nice, warm night, so I turned the flashlight on and looked around there. And it looked kind of like tremors, you know? Like the leaves were just kind of coming up and down. And I was thinking, oh... Shit, it is like tremors. We better call Reba and
yeah,
and really and get this stuff taken care of. But we went out there and then all of a sudden this little nose pops up out of the leaves. It was almost cartoon-like.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little armadillo. And then he just kind of scurries off somewhere else. They're kind of like cartoon animals.
As cute as they are, don't ever touch one.
No, they do carry the
leprosy.
Leprosy, yes. You don't want to get the leprosy. That's
no.
Usually not a... not a good thing if you like to keep your limbs intact. So, the more you know.
Yeah.
Do, 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 do. All right. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. First story today comes to us from Sam. And Sam says, the entity stood over me. Well, he like just jumps right into this, doesn't he?
He does.
This is like dramatic.
I like his style.
It's like, cut to dramatic scene. The entity stood over me, almost floating like a dead animal that drowned in a pool. With the glow of the TV flickering across the room, it remained motionless, much like a cat about to pounce and issue a death blow at a maimed mouse. My body remained paralyzed, and the haunting buzzing sound filled my ears as usual. The room slightly vibrated as usual. The only thing different about this visit was that it had chosen to take the form of a recently deceased cousin who had died in a car accident that day. His face distorted yet demonic-looking, neck slightly sliced in two, and body mangled. Whatever the entity was, it fed off wearing the face of the dead, or even taking on the form of monsters we see in horror movies. It knew us well. For a while, my mom banned horror movies from being watched in the house, as it seems to draw strength for the fear that they generated. I would claim to be sensitive, but I'm not the only person that has encountered it. In fact, it's almost a nightly visitor preying on whomever is most vulnerable. It stood there, body riddled with death, glazing onto me. I closed my eyes and prayed for it to leave, and it left as usual. But it left behind not only a sense of fear, but anger. Anger for an invasion of privacy that never seems to go away. That was the last night I spent at my parents' house. Two nights ago, our beloved dog Spot passed away. He grew ill from old age and didn't move from his dog bed for days. My parents chose to let him pass peacefully in the family home, as they wanted to be there to say their final farewell. The night of his passing, both parents witnessed his bed shift and move as if he was lying on it one last time. They felt comfort as they figured, was his way of saying goodbye, or even thanks for the 15 years of love we had given him. This mood was short-lived as our other dog, the friendliest pug in existence, stormed into the room, growling viciously at the unseen force that had laid on the dog bed. Instantly, the air in the room grew heavy, and my parents both fled the room. Things of this nature often happened at my parents' house, along with the usual poltergeist-like activity. I have more stories about my family that I'll write in later. Excited about becoming an EPP soon. Best, Sam.
I definitely want to hear more. I like his writing style.
He just kind of takes the cake of the story and or the frosting of the story. Mm-hmm. What would it be, the cake or the frosting? What's be the good part? Because you always say, have your cake and eat it too.
Well, or they say it's just frosting on the cake.
Frosting on the cake. So what's the best part then, as far as if you were to reference that to a story? Is it the cake or is it the frosting he's writing about?
It's the frosting in between the layers of the cake.
So he's just giving us the frosting in between.
Yeah.
It's good.
It's very good.
It's delicious cake. Carrot, you think? Or is
no.
it more of like a key lime or
it's fudge?
Fudge? Okay.
Fudge cake.
There you go.
Red frosting for blood or?
Sure.
Okay. Red velvet?
No.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty damn creepy.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of something that comes in and takes the form of people that you know that have been maimed or injured or killed in some sort of horrible accident. And then, hey, look, I'm going to be the ghost that makes you have to see this, and then also makes you think of them in some really disturbing light. That's like just kind of the ultimate in this is some sort of malicious activity of hate, of just darkness.
And I think, too, that there's probably some kind of feeling that comes from this particular entity to where he's able to recognize it as that and not the mm-hmm. dead loved ones.
Yeah. I would suppose after a couple encounters, which it sounds like this happens somewhat regularly, you'd just kind of expect everyone to not be the dead loved one. But I wonder at the beginning how easy that was to pick out.
Yeah.
Or at the first couple of times you're like, wait a second. And then something brings to light that this is not them coming back. This is something else.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for sharing that experience with us. What about this? Here's a question about that, because we have stories of essentially dead loved ones coming back, and they're not always in their best state. Sometimes the encounter seems to be almost like this, where they are in the state that they looked in as they died.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not being malicious and they're not doing anything intentionally to scare anyone. It's more like, here's a message. And then that seems to be gone. So, and then you have plenty where it's, they're back to how they looked before said accident happened.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder a little bit about why would someone come back in the state of the accident? Do they have a choice in that? Or is it sometimes that's really still not them, because it is kind of a frightening and disturbing thing to have to show someone? I mean, I wouldn't want anyone to see me if something horrible happened to me. I want my family to see that me and have that stuck in their head forever. If I was dead as a ghost, I think I would do something to not have them see me as a ghost, mm-hmm. if that's how I was looking, you know?
Sure.
I would be like, I don't know, I'm going to talk to you through the door as the ghost, or I'm gonna do something where you don't have to see me, mm-hmm. but to let you know, here's what I wanted to let you know. Here's my message. Don't look up, or, you know, just something. You know,
I get what you're saying. It's just we've had plenty of stories, too, where the loved one comes back looking that way.
Mm-hmm.
And either forewarns of something bad that's about to happen, or does something positive,
yeah,
and then doesn't show themselves anymore.
It's just like maybe they had no choice,
yeah,
and this is the only way that they're going to get that across. I don't know, as I don't know about any of the things that we talk about on the show. It's just kind of a lot of what the hell.
Mm-hmm.
It happens, but what the hell? So thank you for that story. Thank you for that experience. And yes, we'd love to hear more. Haley writes in, hey, Tony and Jenny, I'm Haley from Kentucky. I discovered the show a few weeks ago while searching for something new to listen to at work. Two of you allow my work days to fly by, and for that, I am beyond thankful. I have many stories of things I've seen over the years. Ever since I was very young, I knew I had a greater sense than others. I've been able to tell when someone was going to die, along with other things. I've been able to sense. I'll start with one that is more elaborate. In fact, my mom still lives in the house. I was 9 in this story. My mom, her boyfriend, and my little sister, about a year old at the time, and our dog, who was an American pit bull and lab mix. She was older, about 9 at the time. Her name was Poppy Sue. The house we had just moved into was decent for the house in our area. 3-bedroom, 1-bath. It was really cheap for the neighborhood. Not the greatest, but cost at least $30,000 less than the rest of the street. I'd heard rumors that people died there, but didn't take them seriously. I was a little kid. I'd experienced a lot of death since I could remember, losing family that was close to me. For instance, I was about 6 when my granny died on my dad's side, lung cancer. My mom's uncle just a month before her heart attack. And a few months later, my grandpa, great but always just called him grandpa, died in his sleep. Mom's side as well. The backstory of that is important to the story. As soon as we had moved in, I felt as if I was being watched, which I felt until I moved out shortly after graduating high school. The room I had was the first bedroom right next to the living room, and the house had an open concept. The living room and kitchen flowed together. Off to the side of the kitchen was the laundry room. The hallway was a small strip between the living room and the kitchen, which had the first bedroom. The master then ended with another bedroom straight back in the bathroom across from the master. Well, the first time experiencing anything happened about a month after getting settled in. My mom and I were eating dinner in the kitchen at a small table. My sister was gone and I was enjoying time with my mom alone. I hadn't gotten much of that since my sister had been born. I was sitting at the end seat nearest to the hallway when suddenly I heard something like faint crying coming from my bedroom. I got up and looked to see what was in my room. Opening the door, I suspected to find something. I looked around seeing nothing but my furniture and I tried to shake it off, but the cries were so loud I thought I was going crazy. I walked back out of my room and asked my mom if she heard it. Looking at me crazy, she told me to be quieter and to eat my dinner. I minded and tried to keep that to myself, but she wouldn't understand the terror that kept finding me while in that house. My mom worked late, often not getting home until 11 or so at night. I had to spend a lot of time at that house by myself, so a few weeks after hearing the crying, I'd been sitting in the living room eating carrots and watching some TV. It was mid-afternoon when suddenly a drawer in the kitchen opened and stuff started falling out of it. I went to go see what fell when my dog Poppy started barking. I was confused. I was the only one home and honestly never expected that. I was standing there in the kitchen putting the beaters to the mixer. The mixer itself was in the laundry room on the shelf. Looked up to see that flying across to me. I screamed loudly and was scared to my bones. Got outside of the house and called my mom. Of course, she didn't believe me, but she sent my meemaw over to stay with me for the rest of the night. My meemaw believed me, but told me to stop saying things to my mom about it. Said she feels them too. I believe she's still very much sensitive, and I think I get it from my mom's side of the family. Yet the things I had been experiencing so far was nothing like the night that happened a few days after the mixer flew towards me. I had a hard time sleeping at the time. My mind had been racing constantly for days. I normally slept great during storms, but this night, I hadn't. I tossed and turned often, even though this all happened 10 years ago. I remember it like it was yesterday. Waking up from my sleep, I felt a presence in my room. I tried to shove it off, telling it to go away. response yet. I'd gotten cold chills and turned my back to my door where I felt the presence. Shutting my eyes, I tried to block it out of my mind, but nothing stopped it. Feeling a dip in my bed as if someone lay next to me, I started to scream, "Get off me! I don't know who you are! Leave me alone! I just want some sleep!" I felt the room change a bit after that, as if something ripped the darkness off of me. Finally going back to sleep, I woke up about an hour later. It was around 3 a.m. and my door was wide open, which I never left open. There was a woman about 5'9 or so, a silhouette in blue, watching in from the doorway. After that, I jumped up and turned on my lamp next to my bed and looked back at see it was gone. I never spoke of this to anyone because of the way my mom acted when I had these things happen to me. I'm sorry for how long this is. I'll be sure to send in more stories. My sister is starting to experience things in that house now as well. Be sure to send more in since I'm less than a mile from Waverly Hills and we all seem to be haunted here.
Do you think that could be part of it?
Being that close to Waverly Hills?
Mm-hmm.
I could see the general area, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I suppose if you have, you know, something that is that active and seems to be attracting, you know, a lot of emotion, you know, it's a lot of, you know, negativity, and I can just see it kind of being a very hotbed, essentially. You know, it's like sound waves, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
If you have, let's say, someone playing music really, really loud on a college campus in their backyard, and then slowly people kind of start coming over and talking to the people, and then more and more people keep coming, and it turns into this party when someone was just playing music because the music is so loud.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of how I view like a place like a Waverly Hills, where it's just such a beacon and it just kind of keeps drawing things in, even more than just what was originally there.
I could see that.
And then if you're in the waves of that, the sound waves or whatever it is, I can imagine you're going to have some things passing through your area as well, because you're kind of in the, you know, the epicenter rings mm-hmm. of such a location.
I was thinking more along the lines of people that tried to get away. You know, being that close.
Or vice versa.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just kind of like, it's like, you know, it's like an earthquake. You got your epicenter map, the circle, and then the waves and that go around, like, oh, over in this area, it's, you know, it was like a 3.4 way over here. In the epicenter, it was a 5.5. But mm-hmm. if your house is in the 3.4, you're still going to feel what happened over there.
Yeah.
So I think that there's some of that when you have something that is that strong. I don't think there's a ton of places that that hold, you know, an epicenter like that, but mm-hmm. they are certainly out there.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably, I wonder how often that is the answer to a lot of hauntings, where people are like, oh, we hear about ghosts a lot over here, but the consideration of, you know, the general location in relation to it, not always taken into account, because it may be a couple miles away.
Sure.
But I think just kind of being in that area, I think you certainly have that. Thank you for the story and sharing that. 855-853-4802, our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online. Of course, you can still get a bunk bed, Bell, by the way, if you'd like one. All you have to do is sign up to be an EPP for a yearly membership, and you'll get 1 month absolutely free. And on top of that, you will also get a bunk bed, Bell, when you listen that you sign up for that yearly membership. So check that out at ghostpodcast.com. Still got a bunch of those to give out to you guys. And that's what, of course, keeps our show on the air. We cannot do this thing without you. If you like the show, you like what you've been hearing, consider signing up for that full year membership. Or if that's not in your budget, totally get it. You can sign up for a monthly membership. That's only $5 a month, like the cost of a cup of coffee. And you get all the bonus material of our show. And like I said, the knowledge and the satisfaction of knowing you help keep this thing on the air. And we greatly appreciate that. We love doing this with you guys. Jonah writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. Back in February of 2009, when I was a senior in high school, myself and two of my friends and my two cousins decided to go to the Gettysburg battlefield one evening. We got there just before dusk and we went to various locations throughout the battlefield, including Devil's Den and Little Round Top. The last stop we made was the Eternal Peace Monument. If you aren't familiar with it, it's a big monument dedicated to all the soldiers during the 50th anniversary of the battle in 1913. To the left of the monument is a huge field that has cannons stationed around it like they would have been during the battle. There are a set of stairs walking up to the monument, and behind the monument is a stone bench. By the time we arrived, it was getting quite dark, and my one friend and I decided to check out the cannons to the left of the monument. My other friend and my two cousins walked around to the back of the monument and started looking around at the woods. It was eerily quiet, even for a cold winter evening. By this time, my friend and I were about 100 yards away, staring out into the fields that the cannons were overlooking. All of a sudden, my friend by the monument let out a huge yell, almost like a scream. I looked to see him, and my two cousins all running towards our van. I looked over at my friend, and we both decided to venture back to the van to see what they were yelling at. When we arrived back at the van, they were inside, and my friend was pale as a ghost and freaking out. I asked him what he was yelling for, and he described walking behind the monument looking towards the woods when suddenly a black mass came out of the woods and was looking at him. He turned to one of my cousins to see where they were, and when he turned back, about a split second later, the black mass was standing 3 feet in front of him at the stone bench. That was when he turned and ran to the van. My friend and I didn't believe him one bit, so we decided to venture back out and see if we could see what they saw. As we walked about 20 feet up to the monument from the van, my friend, who stayed in the car with my cousin, started flashing his headlights up at us. Thinking nothing of it, we continued up the steps toward the monument. We stayed for about 2 minutes, not seeing anything, walking all around the monument, when suddenly, out of the corner of my eye, I saw a black figure poke around the side of the monument. It was a black shadow-type figure that you could still see through. I asked my friend if he saw that, and he said he did as well. We started back down towards the car when I looked around and saw the exact same thing peek around another side of the monument. At this time, I sprinted back down towards the van, and when we both got in the van, my friend asked me why we didn't return to the van when he flashed the headlights. I asked why he flashed the headlights at us, and he said they watched the same black figure they saw earlier run out of the woods to the right of the monument and walk towards us. We all kind of just sat in the van and were quiet for a minute before we decided to leave. To this day, I cannot explain what I saw, and I haven't seen it since, and I've been to the battlefield numerous times since then. On another visit, we did talk to some park rangers about all the ghost stories we've heard about the battlefield and asked their opinion on if they think they are real or not. I've always thought their answers were odd because when I asked the question if they believed the battlefield was haunted, they replied with no, but when the moon is at a certain point, weird things tend to happen.
So it makes you wonder if their point of view is haunted means it happens all the time.
Mm-hmm. Or if it's just the occasional ghost and it doesn't quite count as a haunting. I suppose, you know, when you're in an area where there's a frequency in anything happening, only like the major ones would really stand out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd really say, oh yeah, that kind of happens here. You know, it's like, for example, when I was living up in the Traverse City, Petoskey area of northern of Michigan,
mm-hmm.
In winter, lake effect snow every single day. And it's essentially, it's a snowstorm mm-hmm. every single day for the most part in winter. And it was just constant every day. You know, 3 to 5 inches of snow, it seemed, would be falling on the roads. And plows are always out. So it's essentially like always a snowstorm. But then when you get asked, you know, well, is it like a snowstorm? You know, for someone who's not there, it's like it's a snowstorm every day. Oh, it's not a snowstorm. That's just, it just does that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It becomes so accustomed to it. If we had that in this area for one day, the place would be shut down for a week.
Yes.
But this was like a daily occurrence, and everyone's so used to it, it's not a snowstorm. Where to anyone else who's not from that area would be like, that's a freaking snowstorm.
Sure.
So, and you can insert that into any situation where it's such a regular thing, but it's such an oddity to everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you're right.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so many stories that come out of Gettysburg, and so many people have had experiences, and sensitives talk about it. And it's just like, I think you're right. I think they maybe get a little bit immune to it.
Those aren't ghosts. They're just people that aren't alive anymore.
You only hear a ghost. So right on this one, then there's like a big story or something really dark and horrible. So, I could totally see that being the case. Thanks for sharing that story with us. 855-853-4802, our phone number. If you want to interact with us on social media, comment on any of our stories. I get the question quite often is, you guys have a forum anymore? We used to a long time ago. We decided to kind of change things and move into the world of the Facebook. And that's now where we have pretty much a lot of interaction going on. So you can comment on stories, interact with fellow listeners. You can do that, of course. Facebook, Real Ghost Stories Online is where you find us. Twitter at Ghost Story Radio, Instagram at Ghost Podcast, and even Snapchat at Ghost Podcast as well. It's where you can find us in all platforms of social media. Next letter says, hi, Tony and Jenny. I hope this finds you all well. Actually, I hope that it finds you at all. I have tried over the past few years to write and call this in. I think this makes five times. So here goes. I know I'm sensitive to things. Usually I get images in my mind's eye and I hear things whispered in my ear. I've had other stories that you've read and heard of mine and even made it to an EPP early on. But here's my retelling of my summer with the apparition. He wasn't a shadow man, but more like static. I rarely hear about these. He was like an old TV on an off channel. Tall, very tall, barely fit under the 7-foot doorways of the huge house that I lived in one summer. The summer started off with me taking an overload of summer courses to graduate college on time. We, my husband and I, needed a place to stay. Two places fell through and left us scrambling for a place to stay in my husband's hometown in central Wisconsin, Stevens Point. Ah.
Not, you know where that is.
I worked and lived in Wausau, which is same market, north about 20 miles. A friend of mine, of a friend, offered a room in the house. They were subletting for the summer. We didn't have any other options. I wasn't thrilled with the house or room we had, even though it was a huge and beautiful and it just had an off feeling. But we had no other option, so we moved in and settled in to work and school. Everything started okay. We all got along, three others in the house, and plenty of parties that I had no time for with my schoolwork. But I tried to be as social as my time would let me be without altering my reality. But as summer rolled on, things started breaking down at the house, fighting and bickering between the housemates, and I retreated more and more into our room and my homework so I didn't have to deal with all the drama. My husband worked third shift, and I was usually in bed when he got home. He'd try to be quiet, but most nights he woke me up. One night I woke thinking he was home. He wasn't, and I wondered what had wakened me. My eyes traveled to our huge walk-in closet, and this form of a static man drifted out of it. I know I was awake. This wasn't a dream. He drifted over to where I was in bed and tilted his head as if regarding me. And then drifted through our bedroom door to the hallway. I thought. I didn't feel afraid at the time and went back to sleep. An hour or so later, my husband came home, and I told him about what had happened. That's when my shaking, uncontrolled, started up, which it still does every time I retell this story. Well, things kept getting uncomfortable in the house as the summer rolled on, to the point where the other couple pretty much broke up, even though they still lived together. I heard the girl that lived below me crying in her room a lot. She had bipolar disorder, so had problems that if she stayed on her medication, she would have been okay. But I didn't know this detail in the moment. There was one week that it felt like I had bugs crawling all over me and under my skin, and yeah, that was bad. I must have taken 1,000 showers that week. With a few more weeks left before we were to leave that lovely place, I had gotten up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, which was at the direct opposite end of the hall. In the center of the hall, there were stairs that went to the first floor. Anyway, all was pretty dark as I left the bathroom, and I have to say, I didn't turn any lights on, so my eyesight was pretty used to the dark. As I left the bathroom to go to bed, I saw my static man come through my bedroom door, walk to me, then turn to go downstairs. Once again, I wasn't afraid until my retelling of events. I stood there watching as he turned at the landing. I'm not sure if I said this aloud or just in my head, but I told him, you know, you don't need to be here anymore. The others you love have all left here. You need to follow them. I went to bed. The next morning was beautiful. The house felt light. Everyone was happy. Someone made breakfast for all of us. The couple was back together again and left the house within days. The girl who lived below me admitted that she was bipolar and went off her meds and tried to overdose a few times, but was going back on her meds and getting the help she needed that very morning. So yeah, my story. For all you, my group therapy. Glad to have each other, because it's better to feel not alone. If you're not an EPP, just do it. It really isn't much for you all to get Tony and Jenny. Love you all. Jackie from Wisconsin.
It makes you wonder if the static man had a part in some of the other things that went on in that house,
mm-hmm.
with people not being on their meds and breakups and just the general feeling.
Essentially kind of driving people to make bad choices.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then those bad choices leading to other things, because they got pushed over by the static man.
Right.
Essentially. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times that's how things happen with people and hauntings and things of that nature, where it may not be the entire case of what's going on with a relationship or someone who got off their medication. It's not always that, you know, the ghost is holding back the medication or making the relationship worse and driving things forward. It's more like, if I just give this a little push, mm-hmm. that otherwise wouldn't be there, this person will do the rest themselves.
Right.
I think that happens quite often. So, Jackie, thank you for that story. Greatly appreciate it. It's always funny when I hear a story and it's set in a place that I can actually picture in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm like, I'm placing things in people in places that I remember.
Sure.
I think it's been like, gosh, probably like 15 years or so since I've been to central Wisconsin, at least right around there.
Yeah, you haven't taken me up that way.
No, I mean, it's very much out of the way from any place that we go to when we're in Wisconsin. So it's not like it's on a path towards where my parents live. And it's a little trek, you know, it's about a 2-3 hour drive, mm-hmm. just to get up there. And then once you're up there, you're kind of up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's the North Woods and it's pretty. It's just when we go over to Michigan, it's kind of like a loop we can do.
Yeah.
And it makes sense. It's like, okay, loop and back around and doing this. And there, it's kind of like you're there. And I guess you can kind of just go straight back the same way you came. But I would like to go back there sometime and see what's changed in all those years. Every once in a while, you know, I go online or look at Google Earth and see little bits and pieces that have changed. But it's amazing to me when I look at that and I think, my God, it's been that long. Because
mm-hmm.
to me, there's just so many things that seem like just not long ago, or it's like just yesterday being there. But that's cool. Thank you for sharing your story from Wisconsin. Our next letter says, hi, Tony and Jenny. It's Jeanette from Louisiana. I so love your podcast, being an EPP, and appreciate it greatly that you've shared my experiences. It's clear that you read and listen to all your stories that come your way with care and respect. Thank you for the millionth time for providing this outlet and forum for us. I had some super creepy experiences this past weekend in New Orleans. I celebrated a monumental decade birthday and invited friends and family from all over to help celebrate. I wanted to offer a unique New Orleans experience of staying at a historical local hotel, so I chose the St. Pierre on Burgundy. And its beautiful cottage-style rooms, a labyrinth courtyard, it's nestled in a quieter part of the French Quarter. And with most hotels in New Orleans, there are purported and documented hauntings. I didn't read about any of them prior to our stay because I didn't want to bias any experiences. My husband and I stayed in one of the suites situated on the edge of the property, which was flush against the street. The front door faced the alley that led to one of the courtyards, and there was a wrought iron door that served as the gate between the street and alley. The walls were thin. The sound carried from the streets and the rooms around it. We heard human activity all night and got used to it. After all, it was part of the French Quarter experience, and we were directly across from the main building. Upon first entry, our room felt fine. There's lots of places in the French Quarter that feel dense, dark, and heavy, but this wasn't one of them. I began to think I could have some rest. I was wrong. The first night, a woman visited who looked like she had injuries, as if she jumped from a higher place. Her legs and arms were bent at odd angles. Her hair was long, brown, and stringy. She had a strange tilt to her head and kept staring at me. Her eyes were vacant and filmy, with no pupils. She was wearing a tan, plain dress, almost like a hospital smock. In a strange, crab-like walk, she started coming towards me. I was paralyzed and couldn't move, and I tried to scream, but it sounded like, and felt like, I was trying to scream underwater. My husband shook me to consciousness, and I heard him say, "It's okay. It's okay. You're okay." He said I was making a gurgling sound. Needless to say, I did not fall back to sleep that night. The next night, after a day of hanging out with friends and family in the quarter, my husband and I were both very tired. After falling asleep, I became aware that I was in a grassy field with what looked like a small grassy ridge in the distance. You know, the river was just beyond that ridge. As I looked around, I noticed the color of the grass was yellow and it was dry. The sky was gray. Suddenly, I noticed a figure standing on that ridge, and I couldn't tell what it was, just that it was a figure. I looked around the field some more, began to walk, and as I do in my lucid experiences, tried to notice all the details around me. I noticed a tree line to the left of the distance, and the grass crinkled under my feet. The air felt heavy and dank. As I looked back towards the figure, it was no longer on the ridge and had moved closer. I could now tell that it was hunched over and was wearing what looked like a gray tattered dress. I realized it was an old woman. I began to walk faster towards the trees, still noticing what was around me. As I looked back to the old woman, she had become exponentially closer. I could see a lot more detail. The dress had a high collar, was gathered at the waist with a long, flowing skirt. Her hair was long and gray, but where her face should have been was a blackened space. She began to hold her arms out to me. I started to walk quickly towards the trees, my breath quickening, and I could feel my heart racing with fear. I started to glance back to see where what I'll call the hag-like figure was. She was right behind me, reaching out to me. Her gray hair was flying around her. She had gnarled hands and fingers, and her face was a deep black space. I started screaming. I couldn't move. I tried to wake myself up and was finally able to break the spell and wake up. My husband tried to comfort me. I was sweating. My heart was racing again. I could not go back to sleep. When I returned to Baton Rouge, I looked up the haunted history of the hotel. The property is one of the oldest buildings in the French Quarter, surviving a massive citywide fire in 1794. The family, the original owners of the property, are said to still be around. Heavy footsteps are heard above when there is no above. Things are moved, people feel icy fingertips or the weight of someone at the foot of their bed when there's no one there. There are reports of the carriage master ghost, who is said to stand literally out of the front door where we stayed. He was the carriage master for the original family. There are also reports of various Confederate soldiers haunting the property. I felt a particular connection to Susanna, who is said to have died on the property. It was also the original jazz museum. Louis Armstrong, as well as Tennessee Williams, had stayed there. I do not know who visited me those two nights. Maybe the old woman was Susanna, for at one point the family lived on River Road, which is along the Mississippi, and a levee. The bricks that comprise some of the cottages of the St. Pierre are made of Mississippi River mud, Spanish moss, and horsehair. I'm not sure what they wanted, but it has left a very lasting impression and always a very healthy respect for history and many mysteries of this very unique city. Thank you for taking the time to read this. Stay ghostly.
I wonder how many people go to New Orleans looking for a ghostly encounter.
A lot.
And then a lot of people go, and that's the last thing on their mind. They're there for other festivities, we'll say.
I could see there's probably a good chunk that go for both. Mm-hmm. And it makes you, I mean, in a place like New Orleans, there's just so many hauntings in general. I always kind of wonder, like, I wonder how many hotels don't have any truly documented hauntings, but they kind of play it up like they do.
Yeah.
Just because people are looking for that. Or is that something that really doesn't even need to be done? You know, it's like, oh, if we didn't have a ghost, I'm going to make it sound like it is to attract people. And then the owner gets in there and they start, you know, running the place. And it's like, oh, I don't need to do that. We got plenty already.
I've never been there, so I kind of wonder how much of it is played up in that city as compared to, like, Savannah. Savannah, that's like a tourism thing for them. And I don't know how much of that is played up in New Orleans.
I don't know. I don't know if there's, like, I'm sure there's some ghost tours. I'm just not quite sure if it's, like, to the volume like a Savannah is.
Because we've had several listeners send us in pictures. Oh, I saw this piece of real estate, and they go above and beyond to say not haunted, you know? And I don't remember seeing any of that in Savannah.
No, it's just kind of like implied, like everything around you is haunted.
Yeah.
And Savannah, too, is a town that, you know, there's not like a ton of partying going on. I mean, there's certainly nightlife and there's mm-hmm. people that are out and you can certainly enjoy yourself. But it's obviously a completely different vibe than New Orleans.
Sure.
At night. So I don't know. It's an odd thing to think about of how that works. It seems to be very, very organized in Savannah with how they handle their ghosts, mm-hmm. With the amount of tour guides and different types of tour guides and groups and this and that. And it's all very, very structured. Mm-hmm. And I don't, without being in New Orleans, I don't know how structured that is. It'd be interesting to try that out sometime and sure. see what that's like. Thank you for the story. Next letter comes in and says, Tony and Jenny, it's taken me a while to send in these oddly stories because I just wasn't ready to share due to the newness of recent loss of my mother. My mother had been battling lung cancer for a little less than 2 years and had successfully beaten it back twice. The third time it veered its ugly head was the beginning of 2016. I knew that her time left with us was going to be cut short in the future, so I took my son to spend about 6 weeks with her this summer. Anything paranormal related was the furthest from my brain at this time, so the events that were to come were unexpected. Now, I have had a few ghost encounters before that I had previously shared with the podcast. For example, the apparition that I saw over my son's baby crib when he was only a few months old, hearing footsteps around the house when I was the only one at home, and having something come and pester me while I was in bed at my current apartment. My mother lived in a trailer that was on the property of my cousin who lives in South Texas. The first encounter happened only a few days after we arrived at my mom's trailer. My mom, along with my son and cousin, were sitting out on the front porch. I was eating a sandwich at the dinner table inside. When eating, I heard strange flapping noises from behind me. My mother had a trash can in the kitchen with a lid that had a flap where you could easily place trash through the flap of the lid. The flap was moving back and forth on its own. I looked at the can and was astonished that this flap was moving back and forth by itself. Again, I remind you that I was the only one inside at the time and was sitting a good 10 feet away while the flap was moving back and forth. I looked around the room and said, "Hello, Pop." As soon as I said hello to my father, who had passed away 8 years prior, the flap on the trash can lid stopped immediately. About a week later, my mother took a turn for the worse and had to be hospitalized due to her condition. Not only was she battling lung cancer, she was also fighting COPD, which is chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, an effect the cancer had on her lungs. She was hooked up to a breathing machine and nearly died. I was holding her hand inside the ICU in the hospital and remember the incident which occurred in the kitchen. I looked around the room and exclaimed to the air that you cannot have her yet. She recovered from that battle and was sent to a rehab facility to regain her strength before she could return home. While she was in this rehab, I'd gone to the store to get a few supplies for use around the house. I was staying in her bedroom and was putting some things away in the dresser. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw something rush me. As a parent of a rambunctious boy, I'm used to being rushed suddenly, of a kid trying to catch his dear old dad off guard and play wrestle. I expected to see my son, who was coming towards me, but then noticed that no one was there. I flinched because I did see something rush towards me, and I'd braced myself to receive the blow of the incoming attacker. However, nothing was there, and I was alone. That six-week stay at my mother's trailer eventually turned into a four-month stay. Once we got into August, I sent my son back home with his mother and my wife, who lived in North Texas. I remained behind to help take care of her because she was not able to be on her own because she was too weak and she wasn't able to get a provider who could stay with her. She knew that she was dying and mentally had a hard time coming to grips with it. There were many nights that she could wake up at night, confused and upset. I would have to sit with her and hold her hand while she would try to get back to sleep. One night, she was in bed sleeping, and I was up late watching the Summer Olympics on television. It was around 11:30 at night, and I was walking through the living room when I heard a crash. It sounded like something large, like a desk or bookshelf, had fallen over, and I heard a groan of pain like someone just fell. I ran back to my mom's bedroom expecting to find her under something, but she was asleep in her bed with no sign of anything wrong. I looked around to see what had caused the sound of the crash, and I didn't find anything out of place, and everything was normal. Once we got into September, a cousin had offered to stay with my mother, which would allow me to return to my wife and son in North Texas. I work at AT&T Stadium, which is home of the Dallas Cowboys. They had allowed me time away to help care for my mother, and the upcoming football season was quickly approaching. I thought it was a good time to return home to my family and work and upcoming Dallas Cowboys games and several other events that happened in the fall. I returned home and daily checked with my cousin on my mom's condition. Every October, we have a large family reunion in Central Texas, and it was my mom's hope to make it long enough to attend the reunion one last time. Fortunately, she was able to attend the family reunion and had a good time visiting all the family members who attended the reunion. Sadly, 1 week later, she passed away. It has been rarely strange having her gone. There's a very special bond between a boy and his mother. Of course, I was upset years ago when my father died, but now with both of my parents gone, it's a strange feeling. Since her passing, I've had a few things occur around my apartment. One morning, I awoke to use the restroom. It was nearly 7 a.m., and my wife and son usually leave for the day around 6:45 a.m. My son catches a school bus at 7 every morning, and my wife goes to work after he boards the bus. He looked at my desk clock by my bed, and it showed the time of 6:48. Like I said earlier, I got up to use the restroom and was washing my hands in the sink afterwards. I saw a shadow walk across the room in the reflection of the mirror. I figured it was the shadow of my wife walking across the room as they were leaving for the day. I didn't think much of it and went back to sleep for a couple more hours. Later on that night, my wife mentioned to me that they had left early that morning at 6:10 to grab breakfast from the Golden Arches fast food restaurant. When my wife told me this, I immediately remembered the shadow that I'd saw earlier that morning. It didn't bother me that much because I had just hoped that my mom had stopped by to see me. On at least two different occasions, when I get into bed at night to go to sleep, I felt a presence on my legs. Normally, I lay and sleep on my right side, so I felt what feels like hands pressing down on my legs while I lay down. It's not an aggressive hold, but what feels like just someone placing their hands on my legs to let me know that they're here. I don't get any kind of evil or bad feeling from any of these odd events lately, just hoping that my mom is looking over me. The only time I felt any type of malice or bad intent was a figure I saw rush at me out of the corner of my eye and the crash I heard while staying at my mom's trailer in South Texas. I'm sure that there will be more things happen in the future, and I'll let you know if they occur. Until then, stay spooky, my friends. Philip from North Texas.
I'm kind of wondering if it isn't the mom, or maybe something that attached to the mom, because some of these things happened before she was gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beyond just, you know, how something happened and he said, hi, Dad.
Sure.
You know, I almost wonder if it wasn't something maybe kind of just made its residence with mom.
And then it's now making its residence here with the son.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that being a possibility, but you can also argue sometimes the living haunting the living,
mm-hmm.
To a certain extent, when their time comes closer,
yeah,
and some of their own energy going out there, maybe even subconsciously, making things happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that could also be another possibility there. Thank you for sharing that story and that experience with us. We greatly appreciate it. And that wraps up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like our show, help keep us on the air, become an EPP. Sign up for that yearly membership, get a bunk bed bell and 1 month free, or do the monthly thing if you'd like. $5 a month is all that is. The yearly membership, though, gets that perk of the bunk bed bell. Check it out at ghostpodcast.com. In exchange, you get all those bonus episodes of the show and access to the archive that's fallen off of iTunes. All in all, hundreds of episodes there for you at ghostpodcast.com. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thank you for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.